This podcast of NPR's On Point with Tom Ashbrook is a production of WBUR Boston.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. It's been a hard slog for Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice through Europe this week. She wants to talk about broader, deeper cooperation in the war on terror. Europe wants to talk about torture, about the CIA grabbing people off streets in extraordinary rendition and flying them around the world to black sites, secret prisons, for some very rough interrogation. Secretary Rice says the United States does not authorize or condone torture of detainees. Europe is not at all sure it believes her. Despite denials, critics now speak of an American gulag in Poland and Romania and Kabul. Up next on Point, torture and truth, rendition, black sites, and what's really going on in the war on terror. Joining me now from London is Paul Reynolds. He's world affairs correspondent for BBC News Online. He was formerly a BBC correspondent in Washington. Paul, thanks very much for being with us.
Tom, hi.
Please give us the latest in Secretary Rice's comments on torture and rendition this week. It's been a long trail of comments.
Yes, she has been on the defensive. This issue has dominated the visit, Tom. She made a very important statement yesterday, Wednesday, in which she said in Kiev that the UN Convention Against Torture from 1984 applied to all US personnel everywhere. There had been some attempt in the administration, it is felt, that to allow CIA officers abroad not to be covered by this convention. She said they were. Some people said this represents a shift of policy. Some said it simply clarified the policy. There is still some doubt as how you to define torture. And what do you do about the prisoners in the hands of these other countries to whom they're sometimes sent?
NATO Secretary General Jaap de Hoop Schaefer, and of course Rice is talking with NATO, has been today, finally said today that Rice had cleared the air. He said, "You will not see this discussion continuing at NATO headquarters." Has she cleared the air in Europe more generally, Paul?
I think she has among some friends of the United States. The Germans, who were initially very upset by this, was a notorious case of a man called Khaled Masri, who was abducted in Macedonia, wrongly described as an Al-Qaeda man. They got the name wrong on that one. So the Germans are upset, but they say they've now been reassured. So were the Dutch. The Dutch were worried because they're sending troops to Afghanistan and they didn't want any domestic flak there. So I think the friends of the United States are pretty well satisfied. Of course, the opponents of the war are not, and they've made great running with this whole issue all week.
Why, Paul, exactly has this been so controversial? I mean, Americans have a lot of ambivalence and unease about it as well, but how has it hit Europe in particular, beyond the halls of power, the kind of European public as you read it?
I think it sparked off by a recent story, I think it's on the Washington Post, which said there'd been secret prison sites, these black sites in Eastern Europe. Now it is understood that these may have closed if there had been any, and there's talk of having been moved to North Africa or somewhere. So that sparked off the interest just before Secretary Rice's visit here, and the thing snowballed. People then started looking up the flight plans of all these flights which have come in, 400 into Germany, a lot into Ireland, a lot into Britain, these CIA flights, which the passenger list is not declared. They touch down for refueling, they take off again. These are unmarked planes other than their particular airline aircraft marking the number. And so people have tracked these down, and the whole thing has snowballed.
Secretary Rice seemed to be saying a number of things at once this week. On the one hand, she said, in a very straightforward way, though it wasn't taken as a straightforward statement, that the U.S. doesn't condone torture. On the other, she seemed to be saying to Europe, look, this is a tough fight. You're in it with us. We have defended you and your people by the practices that we've followed. So pipe down. Did you hear both those messages?
She did give both those messages. The second one, you know, was quite strong. The first one she didn't really define, Tom, because one of the problems is the definition of torture. Under the convention, the UN convention, torture is simply defined as severe pain. Well, the CIA has evolved these allegedly six methods of interrogation, which one of which is called waterboarding, where you put polythene over someone's head and dunk them in water. That's supposed to be very effective, but does that lead to severe pain? So there's an argument there over torture, and although cruel and degrading treatment is also outlawed under the UN convention. Nobody's really defined this. This is one of the whole problems we've been trying to deal with in this issue. What is torture? What is cruel and degrading treatment? It is still possible, therefore, that certain techniques are still permissible, though she says torture is not allowed.
Paul Reynolds in London, BBC World Affairs correspondent. Paul, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you, Tom.
I want to turn now to Washington, D.C., and Jane Mayer, staff writer for The New Yorker magazine. She's written a number of pieces on the U.S. policy of rendition. Jane, thank you very much for being with us.
Great to be here.
So what's going on here? It's hard to make our way through all this thicket of disputed allegations and carefully parsed statements. Is it known, as we speak today, Jane, is the United States still practicing rendition? Does the U.S. have black sites, secret prisons around the world?
Well, these are the questions that reporters like myself are busy trying to find out answers to. It's very hard to get absolute fact in dealing with the administration, because these are obviously clandestine programs that they don't talk about readily. But
Poland and Romania say no, we don't have them, and they suggest they never did. Is that widely believed, or is that just a statecraft?
No, it's not widely believed. In fact, I think ABC News got closest to an answer there, and actually reported briefly that they had confirmed a site in Poland and one in Romania, and then it kind of mysteriously disappeared off of their newscast. It was in an early newscast and then disappeared. I think it was there was a kind of an effort to by the lawyers at ABC and the government to expunge it. But but within the community of lawyers that follow this very closely and NGO people following it closely, there it was considered confirmation. It was actually earlier this week of Poland and Romania as sites where there were prisons, black site prisons before. They're closed down now, which ABC also reported. And if there were sites before, people were moved to northern Africa, apparently, so that by the time Condi Rice got to Europe, she could say there are no such sites.
Jane, let me just read something to you, and then I hope you'll take us on into this world. Dana Priest in the Washington Post reported just a couple of days ago about how this might work when rendition gets underway. Let me just read something here. It said, members of the rendition group, I guess that is out in the world, wherever they are, follow a simple but standard procedure. Dressed head to toe in black, including masks, they blindfold and cut the clothes off their new captives. That is, I guess, wherever they're snatched. Then administer an enema and sleeping drugs. They outfit detainees in a diaper and jumpsuit for what can be a day-long trip. Their destinations, either a detention facility operated by cooperative countries in the Middle East and Central Asia, including Afghanistan, or one of the CIA's own covert prisons referred to in classified documents as black sites. There, Dana Priest's kind of short course on how it begins. And then what happens, Jane? What is this process? When and why is it used? Where does it take detainees?
Well, that very much describes there's a pattern of activity here that, I mean, it I have to say, in the reporting I've done on this, I was astounded that it just seemed so kind of unusual for the U.S. government to be dressing itself in black and covering its face and grabbing people and putting them, you know, in diapers and whisking them away to unknown sites without any kind of due process that would be familiar to us here. And it's, you know, I, to get back to your original question also about what do we know about where these sites are and whether they really exist, I mean, I think something you got to keep in mind is that the government has never denied the story that Dana Priest wrote in the Washington Post recently about there being eight sites. So from my end, when usually if you overstep and you get something wrong, there's just a humongous denial. There's been no denial of any of this, which, you know, in many of us take to be, among other things, confirmation. So, what is the process? Do you want to know how does this begin?
Or who is targeted? Who gets this treatment? And then what happens?
Listen, this is a program that has grown and changed since really the mid-1990s. And it began as a very small and kind of controlled program out of the CIA, where they were trying to figure out what to do to stop Islamic radicals, militants, bin Laden, among others. And the CIA was tasked with the charge of trying to stop bin Laden and his followers and see if they could disrupt, dismantle, and somehow, stop them in their tracks. And the problem was they really didn't have much in the way of tools to do that. And so they began to think about, well, what could they do to grab these people? They didn't want to bring them back to the United States to put them on trial because our legal system has so many checks and balances and protections for the accused, and it's also transparent that they really didn't want the process, the secrets of how our intelligence system opened up to public courts. So they came up with this kind of strange alternative method, and it began, though, and as I said, in a very small, discreet way, where they were only targeting people for whom we had very clear legal cases. There were outstanding arrest warrants against them. And we began to try to figure out, well, maybe we could grab these people and put them on trial in the countries from which they came. Most of them, the first partner that we worked with was Egypt, and we began in the late 90s to pick up a couple terrorists who were well known that Egypt wanted and had outstanding arrest warrants for. Mm. The U.S. had the fleet of planes and the ability to basically technically move people and grab them.
You
and
say very clear legal cases, but not clear enough to make it very clear that they could be easily tried in the U.S.
Well, I think that actually some of these people, not only could they have been tried, but some of them, one or two of them in the very beginning were, which is when Condi Rice came out this week talking about, how this is just an old program and there's nothing so wrong with it. What she was talking about was it in its earlier phase when it really was a different program. She mentioned two particular terrorism suspects. One was Ramzi Youssef and the other was Carlos the Jackal. Mm-hmm. Now, both of those terrorists were captured in great feats of derring do, and it really was quite spectacular what this program in the beginning of days of this program. They grabbed these guys, and one of them, Ramzi Youssef, was put on trial in New York, and the other, Carlos the Jackal, was put on trial in France. Both were, convicted. And
now Carlos was grabbed by the French in the Sudan, if I recall.
Yes, but there was quite a bit of involvement by the CIA, in particular by Kofor Black, who was later the head of the counterterrorism task force at the CIA. Mm-hmm. And, it was considered, a great moment of sort of swashbuckling. But there was, in the end, these two suspects in particular were put through some kind of due process. Mm-hmm. They got sloppier. In some of the early Egyptian cases, people were brought back to Egypt and they had been already convicted in absentia, so the process was, they'd been put on trial while they were not there to refute the charges,
right,
and sort of summarily executed when they got back to Egypt. And many of those were, according to, the records in Egypt, were tortured. And certainly the people who were working this program were aware, at least by the late 90s, that we were putting people through a very, very kind of rough interrogation. And that interrogations that would be illegal in our country.
And all that before 9/11. Then came 9/11 2001, Vice President Cheney saying, we have to work the dark side, if you will. What was the evolution post 9/11?
Well, what happened post 9/11 was that as many of your listeners will know, the government declared a whole new class of suspect that was not covered by the Geneva Convention. So there was this whole population of terror suspects, anybody who had aided al-Qaeda in any way, and anybody who had worked with the Taliban, and basically anybody who was suspected of being a terrorist anywhere in the world. So what we went was from before 9/11, where there were, very careful sort of arrest warrant-like procedures on specific terrorists whose arrest and abduction had been okayed by the General Counsel of the CIA, to this a kind of a great unknown population of potential suspects who were... It expanded exponentially because the population of suspect expanded exponentially, and there was no longer such careful review. And it's at that point that people at the CIA have told me, one of them said in particular, who was a lawyer over there, that it became what he called an abomination, because all of the care that we associate with bringing charges against someone kind of began to slide.
Jane, I want to turn to someone who's been in that world. Joining us now from Gaithersburg, Virginia, is Mel Goodman, former CIA analyst at the Office of Soviet Affairs from 1966 to 1990. He's also got a political posture here. He's written a book called Bush League Diplomacy, How the Neoconservatives Are Putting the World at Risk. So he's got an attitude, but Mel, you've also got experience. What do you see in this flap and pushback over rendition, black sites, torture, Mel?
Well, I think it is the dark side of the war, and it's not only Rumsfeld's dark side, but it's Cheney's dark side. And I think it's instructive to listen to people such as Senator McCain, who was the subject of torture, who talks about not just the moral or legal issues, but the whether it works, the pragmatic side of this. He said whenever he was tortured and had to give a name, he tried to think of someone from the Green Bay Packers football team. And he almost exhausted his memory trying to remember all the starters on offense and defense. But those are the kinds of names he gave.
So inside,
and I've talked to the people at CIA, and I've talked to people in the military who were opposed to this. And the CIA Inspector General has already released a report, not released for public consumption, but talking about CIA activities in torture that are a violation of treaty standards. Now, this isn't the same as calling people war criminals, but I think it does beg a lot of questions of violations of treaties we've signed, and including some domestic legal statutes about torture.
So in Washington, in the Pentagon, at the CIA, who's pushing for this option? Who's pushing against it? We hear a lot of what sounds like internal debate, dissent, within the Bush Washington.
Well, there's very little internal debate within the agencies. If you talk to military lawyers, almost to a man, and I was at the National War College, I was on the faculty for 18 years, the military lawyers are against moving away from the Geneva Conventions. Secretary of State Colin Powell, when he was Secretary of State, called Secretary of Defense Rumsfeld to do something about this in terms of the conduct of torture. And this was before Abu Ghraib, because there were a lot of warnings. There was a lot of premonitory intelligence about what was going on in these jails. And at the level of the CIA, I think it's CIA people, retired people and active people, who were the source of the leaks we've seen in major newspapers about the secret prisons, about renditions, about torture, because they know this is just going to bring the CIA back to the world of the Phoenix program in Vietnam and how many decades it took to climb out of that, just as the military is worried about stains from Vietnam and how do you cleanse yourself and sort of regain your credibility and your moral integrity after periods of abuse. And this is what George Bush either doesn't understand or doesn't agree with. So you have Dick Cheney leading the campaign for torture, the unbelievable public posture of going to the Hill and asking for an exemption for torture for the CIA, which just ignores all of the various international covenants that we've signed, including the UN Convention from 1984 that we were late signing, I think, 10 years later in 1994. But as the CIA has said, and what I've been told privately, is whenever they report these violations to the Justice Department, the response has been, look, we don't want to deal with that. You settle it in your own administrative way. So we know these abuses are taking place. We know torture is being conducted. We know it doesn't work. We know it's illegal. We know it's immoral. This is just a bizarre stance for the president to allow the vice president continue to take. And what you're doing is really putting at risk Americans who are overseas, who are going to be increasingly placed into situations where they're going to become captives. They're going to become detainees. They're going to become hostages. And now what we've done with Abu Ghraib and the secret prisons in Eastern Europe and elsewhere is we've given a mandate to the people who hold Americans to do anything they really want to these people. And this is just outrageous, and it's almost unbelievable.
Jane, you hear this powerful pushback from Mel here, and yet you see Condoleezza Rice in Europe this week still kind of twisting. What's she twisting over here?
Saying both two things at the same time. She's saying, one, we don't torture, it's illegal, and at the same time she's also saying to Europe, and by the way, some of these things we've done work. So there's a little bit of sort of weasel words and double talk going on here from the administration. Basically, if you get them aside, and I have, really off the record, they will say, or one or two of them will say, that torture does work. And they will also say that they think that at least waterboarding has worked. And I think that at the bottom, there's both their practical defense of it, and then they also think that that ideologically the commander-in-chief in wartime should have the right to do whatever he wants to do, including torture people, if he thinks that that is necessary to protect America. There are obviously many, many people who disagree with that. It's become terribly controversial as the world has discovered this outlook, and that's why they're on the defensive all over the world now.
Well, we see it, and we see it this week. I want to thank both of you. Mel Goodman, thanks very much for being with us today.
We appreciate your perspective.
Mel Goodman, Senior Fellow at the Center for International Policy, former CIA analyst in the Office of Soviet Affairs, 1966 to 1990. And Jane Mayer, staff writer at The New Yorker magazine, thanks for all your reporting on this. Thanks for your perspective today, Jane. Wonderful to have you.
Glad to be here.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.